Empire doesn't get any better than that. Three dad dances.
There we go. How are we doing today, guys? We good?
We are good. We are good. Luke, introduce our guest today, please.
We are joined by Ian Deef. Ian, how are you, man? All the way from Singapore. Obviously, you're living out there. How's life?
Life is good, man. Yeah, just getting ready for the festive activities, heading to my wife's hometown of Kota Kinabalu Sabah tomorrow. So, last final training sessions.
Drunk.
Yeah, final few sessions here in Singapore. Last long run, really, tomorrow morning. And then, yeah, some stunning weather out there, always in Kota Kinabalu this time of year. Nice and cool out there. So, looking forward to that.
Nice. What is the temperature like there now for this for these long runs and stuff? Is it cooled down a little bit, or are we a bit of a warmer period in Singapore?
Yeah, Singapore this time of year is absolutely awesome to come out. It's a lot more rainy, but that kind of rain where it's still warm and the rain is almost like a sprinkler. So yeah, just
a nice mist.
Yeah, exactly. So just got to be a little bit careful. Sometimes that can cause the humidity to rise, and the humidity out here is even more of a factor than the heat, really, in terms of those long runs that can really, really tax you.
There's a word for that. It's called moist.
Indeed.
Moist. What a word.
Oh, no. It's already taken a downwards turn.
Hap to me. But we are one down today, Luke. We are down one Sir George Edwards from our previous podcast on Ian's. But, hey, we will troop on with three, eh? Three dads.
Yes. Absolutely. So this is a rollover from Ian's podcast, Unlocking Athletic Potential. We did a dad pod on there, chatting about our experiences as fathers or soon to be fathers. I believe when we did that, Ian, you were awaiting the baby. So we thought we would do another one on our podcast, just chatting about everything, sport, fatherhood, how it fits in with like training, life, what it all kind of affects. And obviously we will chat all about OCR and other sports as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, 5 months it was prior to me becoming a father, we did the podcast. So, yeah, I actually had a listen this morning on my cycle to training. Yeah. It was quite fun listening back on it. It was a brilliant conversation. just to be honest, some absolutely outstanding takes, which I've definitely used from when we had that conversation. It was really kind of reinforced some of the things I was going to try and really be intentional about with my fatherhood. Being a father, and I feel like I've definitely used a lot from that conversation in terms of, you know, being a father for the last 15 months nearly.
No, what's really amazing. Interesting is I think if we look at this now, I'm where Luke was at that period with the child.
Yep.
Luke is where George was at that period, and you're now, Ian, where I was at that period, you know, almost, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
I think yours, Jack, she was 3 weeks old when we spoke.
Yeah. Oh, really? 3 weeks? Was that really that young? So it really was new for me.
Yeah.
She's now 19 months, which is even scarier.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Someone said to me yesterday, she said, Christ, when did your little girl become a little girl? And I'm like, I don't actually know. And you'll probably get this, Ian, now. You've still got that real baby age, probably. You're still feeling, you know, going the baby things. And what happens is, before you know it, and everyone tells you this, oh, they grow up so fast, and you go, well, they don't, time has changed, a day's still a day, a year's still a year, but Jesus, they grow up fast. And it's those little things you don't think of, you know. The vocalness, I think when they start talking and telling you how they feel, I think then you start to think, oh Christ, this is a little person, you know, it's no longer this thing you can sit in the corner and play with. It almost is, they tell you what they want now, and it's kind of scary.
Yeah, I almost feel that transition from kind of baby to infant is when they start walking, when they're mobile. Yeah. And just certainly the changes and perception of time, so true. Like everyone tells you, and there's not a truer word said in terms of your perception of time has never moved so quickly. And you cherish every change, every moment. And, you know, fatherhood's definitely been the most magical part of my life so far. It's you know, been the best thing ever. So yeah, loving it.
It is funny how you have things like, I don't know, let's take OCR as our sport. You know, you do things in OCR, whether it be World Championships. I mean, you've obviously raced at the high level over in different countries and stuff. You know, you go, oh, that's the best moment of my life. That's the best. Oh, my God, that experience is incredible. Then also when you have a child, you're like, well, actually, none of that really matters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It is weird how it's a different type of, I suppose it is a different type of love for what you're doing. But it's funny how all of a sudden it's like, I don't care about any of that anymore. Really, what matters is this little thing, you know, and you pick it up and whatever. You know, it's crazy how that does sort of take on, doesn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. I've always been grateful for racing. Obviously, sort of discovered OCR Spartan in my later years. I think I was 36 when I did my first Spartan race.
Yeah, you're good, you're fine.
Where certainly when I was younger and the emphasis was more on my sprinting, which really was where I'd say my natural talents really lay. And when I was really trying to hit that potential in my younger years, I guess had I become a father earlier on, it would have been interesting to see how I would have felt then. But where obviously I'm seeing OCR as kind of just an extra in terms of something I love, but not the be all and end all, transition to kind of fatherhood and, you know, the compromise, it's not really a compromise. You know, the little guy comes first every time. And it's an easy decision to make. But that said, it's almost like one of the things I found is when I did actually try to balance the training and becoming a fatherhood, and when I say balance, maybe try to taper back on the training as part of that plan, it wasn't a good thing. You know, my training is my passion. It's almost also my kind of outlet as well in terms of me becoming me, right?
Escape.
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of like where I come up with my best ideas or I get the respite from the fatherhood or work. And it's part of the mix of my overall balance. And I think that was one of the kind of maybe mistakes I made kind of quite later on in this fatherhood journey, sort of around June, July this year. Just didn't get that quite right. And now where I'm, you know, really putting, I think it was Tom Evans came on your podcast. And I think the tip he gave, which is probably what I feel has been the best take from your podcast, is when he said he schedules his training and he makes sure if it's 7 o'clock, for example, 7 a.m., he commits to the training at that exact time. And that's one of the things I feel like I've been really good with. It's easy when you've got a group because, say, the track session's at 7:30 p.m. They're going at 7:30 p.m. regardless of whether you're there or not. But if you can install that discipline within your own training and literally keep it to the minute. You know, if I, for example, I know the little man's going to wake up between 6:30 and 7 most days. So if I get my long run started at like 4:45, for example, which is always a benefit here in Singapore because of the heat and humidity anyway. So it's almost worth doing that regardless of whether you're a dad or whatever commitments you have. You know you're going to be back for that wake up, or similar in the evening. If you're going to bed at 7, you make sure you get out the door at like 7:10 or as soon as he's settled, and you just make sure you've got your training kit on to commit to those times, because that's when you're likely to disrupt the flow and sort of possibly change your session, adapt your session, or miss your session, which I haven't done, but yeah.
No, I mean, yeah,
I pick on two things there, Ian. Firstly, why is it nothing that I've said that's the hot take? I'm a bit disappointed it's a guest, but there you go. But secondly, I think also you hit nail on head there with, you know, look at Tom Evans, for instance. He's a top athlete, you know, dedicated. And I think if you look at any athlete, whether it be Ryan Atkins, Lindsay Webster, Tom Evans, John Alban, all these top guys in their game, they are dedicated. That is the difference, you know. Yep. And I think even with children, I mean, there's plenty of people out there that have done it with children, especially like other sports in the Olympics, especially the women, you know. Yeah. Jessica Rennis, obviously, she got pregnant and carried on doing it. Other people have obviously had kids at high level. But the point there is you made it, is it is dedicating that, right, I've got to go out at 4:45 for my run. And I know personally, I always go, sleep, run. And I'm already trying to find reasons not to do that run.
Yeah.
And it is funny, isn't it? Because like, I know I want to do that run. And the even worst of it is, if I do have a full week of getting up at 4:45 and running, I feel so good for it.
Yeah.
And it makes you want to do it more and more and more. But you have to be there and you have to get to that dedicated stage before it takes a hold. because it's so hard. It is so hard without kids, let alone with kids.
Yeah.
And I know when I was a father, I'm in a very lucky situation where my work allows me to work when I really want to work.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I'm not structured to any hours. So if I want to do my runs during the day, brilliant, I go do my runs during the day. But all of a sudden you plonk a child on you, because I do a lot of daddy daycare, as I call it. You know, I play dad, I look after Margot quite a lot during the week. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can't do my run because now this little one's depending on me to do this, do that.
Be here.
Be a dad. And all of a sudden then you go, well, I haven't got my run in today, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, I haven't got my run in, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, and that's where you have to be clever with training. Like, you have to find things that fit you. And I mean, we spoke about it last time on the podcast. You know, I got heavily into Zwift for that very reason.
Yeah.
Because I knew going next door, getting on a bike for half hour, an hour, was easier for me than putting my running trainers on and going out for an hour. Because if Margot woke up, or if Emily needed me to have Margot for a second, or Margot needed me, obviously, I was there instantly. Whereas if I'm 8 miles away on a run, dad's not there, you know. So it's finding things that work for you as well, and that could be anything from grip to cycling to running to whatever it is, a treadmill. I know Tom Tweddle, you know, he's now got 2 children, he does a lot of his training on a treadmill for that very reason. So it is then finding things that work for you as a dad, isn't it, or a mum, obviously.
I think that kind of environment you live in is absolutely essential. And you know, you see, you know, John Albon, when he used to live, I think it was in Bergen, wasn't it? Literally outside his door. And then he used to run up that mountain and back down. And, you know, when you have that on your doorstep, when you become a father and you've got that training right there where you need, I'm on the 24th floor of a condominium. So literally one of the sessions I do is up and down my stairs. So that's literally within seconds, but perfect for when I'm training towards the stadion. I did 3 stadiums this year. And my stair running was probably the strongest part of my race when I was hitting that, and a product of your environment, right? That was there for me. And it's interesting as well what you said with regards to that conversation that you have with sleep, because that is going to be the thing as a new father, which you are going to have less of realistically. You know, you're going to get more get ups in the night. And it is that conversation of, am I going to be able to actually produce a decent session off, you know, say you've just had a couple of hours sleep, literally, is it actually worth it? And what I found is I will always go and train regardless. And it might just mean pulling back, but I found keeping to the routine, even if it means that I'm not actually completing the planned session. And I always, to be honest, try to complete the planned session, because I've planned it and structured it in such a way where, you know, it suits exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I've kind of like talked myself out of that conversation. You know, we all get tired. You might wake up on race morning and have the shittest night's sleep, right? You've got to go and produce. You've got to go and do the business. So it's fantastic training for that. Yeah. You don't want to be like, oh, key race of the year. Say you went to Abu Dhabi and those motorbikes kept you up all night. You know, we've just put ourselves in the best training environment ever. You know, you know, crying baby or whatever else. You know, don't make excuses for yourself. Get out there, get on with it. And you use it as a reason to push yourself further, right?
Yeah, but there's some great points there, definitely for like new dads as well. If you are going to become a father or just become a father, if you're training, like, kind of make it easier for yourself to train. Have some weights maybe at home, like Jack said. Maybe look at Zwift as a training platform, or if you really can, maybe buy a treadmill, or just... I've found if I make it easier for myself, I'm going to train. If I want to go do a run in the morning in the gym, but I've had a really bad night's sleep or shorter sleep, right, I'm just going to drive to the gym instead of riding or running to the gym, and then I'll do my key session there, and then I'll go to work, kind of thing, instead of saying, oh, I'm absolutely killed, and now I've got to get on the bike, it's cold, it's wet, I'm tired. If I make it easier for myself in a certain little way, I'm kind of more inclined to do that kind of thing as well. But there was a few other great points in there, Ian, definitely, that you brought up before. And Jack, you said about the people that have had kids. You just seen the female Ironman world champion, Chelsea. She's a mum, like a pretty new kind of mum. So I think one of the things that she was saying about, and like what you guys have been touching on, is that like your partner is like key to all this kind of training. If they're really supportive around you and allowing you to kind of like have that time to do training, they understand that that's like a big part of your life, it's going to make a huge difference, especially if you're like super honest with them right at the beginning. Like, look, training might seem like a really fun, exciting thing for me, but it's also going to make me like nice, grounded. It's going to make me want to come home, like do all, help with the kids, do everything, all that kind of stuff. It's like balance, keeps the balance with within your mind.
You
basically
hit a good point there, Luke, because like it could work the other way as well. Like if you keep putting off that key session because it's either hard or just, you know, like say rainy, wet, cold, you know, especially, I mean, obviously Ian hasn't gone through this. The last few weeks, we've obviously gone through a bit of a cold snap in the UK. You know, everything's freezing. It's easy to say, screw it, I'm staying inside today watching TV. Do you know what I mean? But all of a sudden that does build up on you as a, I think more as a bloke. I mean, we don't talk about this enough as like mental health in bloke, but in men, you know, we know it's there for women. We know the women have got stressed, but from the men's side of things as well, you know, a lot of depression and a lot of suicide rates in men, you know, young men our age. And I can well imagine if you're that way and have that little, you know, you're susceptible to that, you know, having a child is a massive pressure. All of a sudden you haven't done what you love. That takes a toll, you know, and you do come home grumpy, more tired, more angry. You're more likely to take it on the ones you love, you know, and worse, your child. And then your child doesn't get that upbringing that it wants because actually you're being a dick, basically. So, and I think you make a really good point on the other half as well, with a man or a woman. You know, your other half is massive in that connection. It failed for me once. It's working for me a second time, thank God. But it's definitely a massive point you say. Talking about sessions then, Ian, what have you found is the best session to incorporate your child? And firstly, so you had a little lad and called, what's he called?
Xavier Cruz is his name.
Xavier. Okay. And it is all one word. All
that
one
that is a name.
Yeah, Xavier Cruz. Yeah.
That is a
nickname.
Xavier.
So have you experimented taking Xavier on runs or climbing yet, or any OCR style workout yet?
For sure. So I brought the steps. Xenix. I haven't taken him up the steps. I've walked him up so sometimes what I do is when we get home, because we're on the 24th floor, we'll walk up the steps, which is good fun, especially if I'm carrying him. We do have lifts, But it's, to be fair, like walking up is about 3 minutes. It's fine and it feels great. And, you know, sometimes...
All extra training.
How many steps is it, Ian? I know I'm going off a tangent.
That's right. So I think it's six. But I always double step. So I think we're talking 4, 8, 8 times 20, 240. About 280 steps.
Okay, nice. So you're getting your step count on your watch every time you double steps.
Absolutely, And, but the Cybex Zeno was the stroller I ended up getting. If I'm totally honest... It's not the one I'd recommend.
What one would you recommend?
I'd recommend the Thule, as Jack pronounces it, from Sweden. I think I'd go with the Urban Glide 2. I've used it and I really like it. The Xenix, this is Cybex.
Can we see it? Have we got it in the room?
It's actually next to me,
What are you on? What platform are you on? Your camera?
It's quite tricky too because I've actually folded it up.
We'll post a picture. Jack can input a picture in there somewhere.
I'm sure I can do that.
The frustrating thing about it is it's got a fixed front wheel. So when you're turning, if you're completely on the straight, it's unbelievable. But every so often you just have to kind of like, maybe you're going sort of like probably every sort of 70, 80 meters. You just have to give it a little tilt and a lift.
To square it up.
Yeah. So the second thing I brought for it was like a waist belt. So I'm pulling it, which sometimes they reckon in terms of a training effect is similar to kind of hills, right? Because you're taking slightly shorter steps with the weight behind you.
So you're in front of it.
You're in front of it. Exactly.
Whoa. Okay. This is next level shit.
You're pulling it behind you. Yeah. And in terms of.
And is that safe?
Yeah. Yeah. He,
for the child.
Oh, he loves it. And it's big. And we're very lucky with the running paths that we have directly outside our condo. So I live.
Like human cannon cross.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And this buggy's super secure. It's a proper path, which is just for pedestrians. So yeah, he's in the back. He loves it. And that's a superb workout. But. Again, you have to get out early doors or do it slightly later, which at the moment don't quite fit with his timings, because as soon as the sun comes into play, like this belt around you, it just is like sweat fest, right? You know, if it was back in the UK, it would be absolutely ideal. But certainly just because of the weather out here, it kind of doesn't tick the box. So yeah, the Thule Urban Glide 2 would be the one I don't have. Nibiru.
Can you pull that one as well?
I think it's just a push. There's quite a few out there which are you can strap around your waist and pull. And slightly cheaper than the Cybex Zeno. Cybex Zeno is the name of it. But yeah, I think, you know, we are definitely trying for number two. And the third attachment, which I haven't talked about, is you can actually put this on the bike as well.
Okay. So on the front.
On the back, as it like a trailer.
Oh, so like a trailer pull along, yeah.
The plan would be we'd probably get that. And Sharon, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly that.
Okay.
This is exactly the stroller. So we're thinking of getting the attachment to put on the back of the bike so Sharon can ride with Zavi. And hopefully, if we're blessed enough to have number two, I'd probably go with the Thule Urban Glide 2 and be pushing that while Sharon's going on her bike. Yep, this is the one. So yeah, it's even got, if you live in a country where there's snow, there's even a ski attachment. Yeah.
A ski option, I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But
why not?
Yeah, you need a decent path. And that fixed front wheel is just, it's just frustrating.
Interesting you say that, because I have an out and about Sport V5, so the new out and about stroller, you know, racer stroller. And the newish one has a pivoting front wheel, and the old one has a fixed front wheel.
Right.
And everyone says the fixed is better than the pivoting.
Oh, wow. Hmm? Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's mainly because if you are going fast, and I mean, I've actually set myself a target, and we'll talk about targets in a minute, but I've set myself a target next year of part run. I want to be 17 and a half with the stroller. With the pushchair. You know, so because Felixstowe is flat, it's concrete, and it's just literally straight.
Is it like a there and back?
It's there and back. So you do have to do a whole 180 degree turn at one point. But in general, you're just flat out. And what I found is, when I'm running along, you can push the stroller. As long as there's no one in front of you, you can push it a good 2 meters ahead of you and you can run at full pace. And then as you get up to it, you push it again, full pace. And it will almost glide. You know, if you're sitting at sevens or sixes or whatever you're sitting at, it will just sit in front of you at that pace.
Yeah.
You know, the more you push, the more you put. And I think if you had that moving wheel, you wouldn't be able to do that, because obviously it would veer to
it would move across.
You know, so I think if you've got a lot of turning, that I'd imagine that the front wheel moving would be the beneficial thing. Whereas if you're just literally like I am, pushing that thing and running alongside it. I mean, I sometimes in the summer, I definitely go pick Margaret from Childminders in it. And people will look at me because I think I'm crazy, because I've got like a child being pushed at like 6.5 minute mile pace in the front. And they're all like, what's going on here?
He's just throwing that baby.
Yeah, he's pushing that baby really fast.
You're the normal one, Jack. They're the crazy ones.
I am the normal one. Exactly. Using cars. They're the crazy ones.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it's interesting with park runs in England, probably not so much in the winter, but definitely in the summer, I saw a huge, huge uptake in parents pushing their children at parkrun. It's become a new thing, and I definitely think there will be some buggy records soon, because I reckon there will be someone that'll have to set an unofficial parkrun record or something called a buggy, because you know there must be.
Well, they've got it in marathons and half marathons.
Lauren Stroud was on our podcast, and she broke the world record for the half marathon with the Thule Urban Glide 1, I believe, was her weapon of choice. It was 1:22.0, I think. Yeah,
with a buggy. That's
with a buggy. Yeah,
let's go in some.
She's rapid as it is. I'm not sure what. I think she's dipped under 1:20. I think she's around 1:18 for her half. So four minutes slower. But yeah, not like 1:22 pushing a buggy is pretty impressive. Yeah, for sure.
No, do you have a buggy? Do you push Harper much in a buggy or not really?
I don't know. We've got a little tricycle now because she's a bit more. She's got older and she wants to like get out, run. We got the tricycle with the little pedals, so she can pedal while I'm pushing her. She just keeps her a bit more entertained. But it's one thing I really wish I had got right at the beginning. I wish I just brought a buggy and ran with her quite a lot when she was younger.
like Ian said, it was routine. I think if you tried to introduce it now, she'd be like, no, I want to walk, you know. But I think because, like, especially Margot, she's used to getting in that buggy from a young age and being pushed on a Saturday morning. She just does it. It's a thing now. Like, she'll say to me, Daddy, yeah. Parkrun. You know, they almost want to get in and do it, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. If you start it early, it's kind of a bit more continual. Now Harper really just wants to walk, run. Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing, right?
It's not a bad thing at all.
She likes
to hold my hand.
It's pulling your hair out moment, though, isn't it? When you just want to get to the shop and it's 2 minutes away and it takes you 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's going to happen anyway, mate. Yeah.
This is true. That's life. Ian, with your buggy, just a quick interest before we move on. What do you find that it improves your running style or makes it worse?
I find that... So the Cybex has got a really nice kind of area in front where, you know, you can really still lift your knees high and... the biggest detriment is his arm drive, right? But then I guess the biggest benefit is that you do focus more on having to drive power from your legs to maintain speed, right? So I'd say overall worse, because you're kind of leaning forward a little bit more, so posturally your shoulders have to carry a little bit more forward. Lack of arm drive, probably not as efficient as it could be. But I think if you think about it and you're a little bit more intentional with, you know, pushing it every so often and not holding on to it so much, and you're conscious of these things, you know, it's a training tool with how you want to use it. But yeah, I'd say overall, it's better to probably have the hands free. I was going to say the other thing that I have been finding, so Sunday mornings was when I started to introduce this. And now I'm actually doing that Sunday morning run with our dog, Nikita. And I'm using the like a Canicross strap and leash with that, and that I'm finding is amazing. There's certain parts, and she knows the route, like, the you know, off the top of her head, you know, I don't need to tell her anymore exactly where to go. We've got like a 8, 10 and 12k route, and it's just at that point we just take slightly different turns. And the last k, when she's knows she's very close to home. Goodness me. We've had some close calls there. She's done a couple of 90 degree darts where there's been a squirrel or something, and I've tripped up pretty badly, actually. Like, I've really hurt myself on one occasion. But that is so much better in terms of just efficiency, technique.
Pulling you through the hips.
Yeah, exactly. Love it. Yeah.
I've got a little sprocker that weighs no more than 15 kilos. And mate, honestly, even having that little bit of weight pulling you through your hips and up is phenomenal. You know, you can average maybe like, and let's just say, for instance, your zone two, if we talk it in heart rates, you know, if you're averaging eights in zone two, all of a sudden you can average sevens because you're having to work that less hard.
Yeah, just that small percent less.
It's crazy. You can see, like, now why some of that, Ken, across some of those guys are rapid.
Especially
if they've got these special breeds, like Whippet, Half Whippet, Labrador, do you know what I mean? Like,
Ben Robinson's got the Parkrun world record. Yeah, 12, I think it's 12:23, right?
Yeah, 23, that's right.
It's just
crazy. With a dog.
It's insane.
But that dog, I think, wasn't especially bred for that very thing.
It's a hybrid.
Hybrid Whippet / Husky, isn't it? Stupid.
Yeah, it's
powerful and fast.
Yeah,
it's basically.
But they've banned dogs now from Parkrun, right? From what I understand, and certainly a free leash. Oh. I think you can still run with it.
You can't have it on a harness or something.
Yeah, you can't have the Canicross harness, I believe.
You've got to hold on like a hand leash or something.
So it's
got to
be
like
a heel leash rather than a...
I'm not sure if that's certainly out here that's right, but I don't know if that's true worldwide.
You can see that, right? I mean, like, it won't be long before they make... What they need to do is either, rather than banning it, because you're going to just wipe out quite a few people at each parkrun, they should make a way for it. So your normal parkrun go at 9, okay? Your buggies go at 9:05 or 9:02, and your K9s go at 9:10. You know, just filter it through. You know, it's easy done.
I think it's obviously all volunteer based, and it's like time and stuff. But I think if they're doing it on a handheld leash, that's probably just as fine. I guess you won't be as fast, definitely. But there's specific events races, that you can take dog. There's races and stuff. So I'm sure if you want to go super quick, you can sign up to a race.
To bring it into OCR, because obviously not the dogs do the obstacle, but how cool
on the rig. Woof.
How cool would it be? Like, unclip, do the rig, clip back
unclip.
On. Sit. Bang, 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 down.
Love it.
You're very ambitious, Jack. I like the idea.
The other
ideas.
Thing you can try, Ian, as well, and I did try this, if you've got a well-behaved dog that will actually stop and heel and do as you're told, you can actually clip the dog to the pram.
Obviously,
you know, they can keep on pulling it if you know your dog will stop if you scream at it, obviously. I mean, my dog's quite well trained, so I can make it stop, but... I wouldn't advise that if you've got a dog that's just going to chase.
Nikita's like squirrel.
She's all over the place. Yeah, we're definitely going to spend some time in the new year retraining certain elements of her behaviour to get a little bit more in line with what she needs to be doing. But yeah, no.
I'm just trying to think of squirrels in Asia. I'm just trying to think that do they look the same? They must look the same.
Yeah, exactly the same, mate. Yeah,
sunglasses on.
Still,
oh, we digress.
Before we get too deep into a bit of training talk and stuff, there was one point that you mentioned in probably about 10, 15 minutes ago about kind of like becoming a dad slightly later after you had done some like sporting endeavors and stuff when you were younger.
Yeah.
I guess slightly contentious question, but how do you guys feel about being a dad later in life? Like not later in life, we're like in our 30s, mid 30s, but are you happier with that because you've had chance to kind of explore, do stuff, try athletic endeavors and learn and be a bit more like older and mature when you became a dad? I think personally, that's kind of one of my feelings. I think when in my 20s, I had probably too much fun and my maturity level probably wasn't there to be real committed and like as I am now as a father, and I feel a bit more grateful that I've become a dad slightly in my early 30s because I've had a chance to like kind of live and do a little bit. Obviously I still want to do athletic endeavors and I'm a bit more focused on those, and obviously my daughter and stuff. But what's your guys' thoughts on it? Is it
secondly to that question, do you feel like it's actually changed you? You know, like I personally, and I think Luke would agree, you know, like, yeah, I'm 34, I'm mature, blah, blah, blah. But actually having a baby, a daughter, a son has actually even more made you more, you know.
It's definitely, it's taken that another level of like maturity or just like commitment in life and like understanding.
Yeah. So I was 42 when we had Xavier. So I feel like I'd had my feed completely.
You don't look it, by the way.
Oh, thanks, buddy. No, appreciate that.
You got the baby face, mate. Mid 30s.
43 now. But
all right. Ian's a vampire.
You could have said 28. Everyone would have gone, all right, yeah, 28. Then.
Yeah, I was 16. I was great.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, I'd had my feed. Like, I gave the athletics a really good shot sort of around the age of 21, 22. I should have probably pushed it a little bit more, but I'd kind of accumulated a lot of student debt. Had to really, you know, I took a year off actually to try and make the Commonwealth Games team in, God, what we're talking now, 2002, because it was in Manchester. And I felt like that was a realistic target at the time. And I finished, basically my dad was born in Scotland. So I'd represented GB under 23 level over 400 meters. But when you looked at trying to qualify, if I was going to be part of the English team, so I was born in Southampton, there were like 20 odd guys ahead of me, where for Scotland at the time I was ranked second, and I actually finished third in the trials, but I was the second Scot home, and I was hoping that they would take a relay team. I didn't have the individual qualifying, but they didn't. We had one very strong 400 meter runner who had the B qualifying, but they didn't even take him. So yeah, they had a limit on the number of athletes they took. I think it was like 23, 24, and they took those that they felt were contenders to actually make the final of the event. So yeah, kind of after that, got into the teaching, things really kind of, you know, like didn't progress really with my athletics from there. And then sort of, yeah, started Spartan around sort of 36, knowing it was just a passion project really, but still having aspirations to improve my performance. But I guess my mentality from that age was always, you know, I was just so grateful for that opportunity to do this race. It was, you know, if you know, I was trying to obviously train to improve my performance each time, and you know, that led to a passion, kind of the OCR. I was more kind of, I guess, gym heavy rather than run heavy, and that led to a passion for endurance running, which yeah. isn't sort of where my natural skill set lies, but it created a brand new challenge. And then so kind of everything was just a bonus. And then when Xavier came along, it was still the same, really. It was kind of like I'd always been grateful and seen it as an extra, but adapting to parenthood and making that my priority was kind of very easy. But maybe that was because I'd kind of ticked all the boxes I wanted to. And I'd had some sort of great other experience as well in terms of, you know, a little bit of hosting on the side in terms of did some work for sort of ESPN and Fox Sports at the Olympics. I hosted at the 2014 Commonwealth Games as well. I think you guys know I was on Gladiators as a contender as well. So I had these, I think like all of these experiences, when it came to parenthood, it was like, you know, if nothing else happens for me, then it doesn't really matter. I've had like a really good, you know, go at things up until this point. And now it is all about, you know, not just the little man, but my wife and family comes first. But that said, I still believe the balance that, you know, training and aspiring to push yourself further brings is essential. And next year, I've just targeted literally just two races for the first half of the year, which are...
What's the races?
Yeah, the Kew Gardens Half Marathon. So that's on the 2nd of April. I did the 10K last year, literally when I was out with you, Luke. And I think you could see probably I wasn't in great shape at that point. I was just coming back from a little bit of an injury and managed to run a decent-ish time for the shape I was in at that point. And then I'm going to do my first ever marathon in the Gold Coast on the 2nd of July. So, yeah, the good thing about both those races, they're in the first weekend, second weekend of my school break from teaching. So we can travel as a family. And then obviously after the half and after the full, I'm going to need a bit of rest time as well, right? So that syncs perfectly. Sharon and Xavi, they can come and watch me, you know, cheer me on in the race. And then I'm going to need some rest so we can really savor those experiences in both the UK and Australia. So I'm planning a lot more now around what would work as a family while still, I guess, selfishly looking at races that I'd want to do. But those races have been purely picked on the fact of the timing and the fact that afterwards we can enjoy those places rather than me just having to wake up every morning and still gear my kind of life towards a particular goal and whatnot. The goals are kind of like still there, but incorporating would work with the fam, you know?
Definitely. I think it's when, like, we all do race calendars or have a look at races online at the beginning of the year. And all the time now, it's kind of like, right, I need to take into account, like, the family as well as my ambitions to do such a race. And I definitely think for me, I've kind of, my A races, let's say, I've kind of shortened the list a little bit to make sure that when I'm putting like a lot of effort into training or travel, if it's a race that may not be in England or somewhere around, that I'm not trying to overextend. Whereas 2-3 years ago, right, I'm going there, I'm going here. I can kind of do a bit more when I didn't have a child and it was just me and my missus, right? We could go kind of wherever and do more per se. But now I feel that it's a bit more specific, and I'm kind of doing those races as in, I always take, like yourself, like take them into account. Like, what can we do afterwards? Maybe it's a nice trip as well. But maybe I'm only going to do a singular race out of a weekend instead of the full weekend, what I would do before. Kind of, it just brings a different level of thinking, I think, into it when you're trying to think about it, like your family as well as your ambitions. It's kind of weighing it up.
Absolutely. I think there's, you know, fathers out there who are successful who may be neglecting the family. We just don't know everyone's personal take on it, right? You know, there could be fathers out there who actually that, you know, racing is still the be-all and end-all for them. And so, you know, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and maybe that's disrupting the flow of their relationship. They're not being a great father, but they're still a father, where there are other people that kind of, you know, maybe because they're mature or maybe just because of different experiences or priorities or whatnot, do change their plans based on what's best for the balance of them and their families. And that's certainly where I'm at with it. As I say, let's just say for worst comes to worst, and you know, I need to be there for my family rather than these two races. That's not a difficult decision to make. As I say, I've had my, you know, so many brilliant experiences. It's just one of those things, and I'm happy making sure that my family are happy, and that's the priority. So, yeah.
Yeah. We're in that like position where if you do miss an experience or you do have to skip that race, there will be another race, per se.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're still going to train. You're still going to enjoy racing, but there'll be another A race come up, or you can find another marathon. It is not, we're not in a position where this is our career and our family depend on the money that's going to come from these events or something, which I guess is kind of a blessing in one way. Obviously, we'd love to be professional athletes, but it's a blessing that you can kind of really focus on the family per se. And if stuff happens and you can't do those races or events, it's not like the end of the world.
Yeah. I found when I initially became a dad, you know, so Xavier was born October 5th, 2001. Sorry, 2001, 2021.
And 2001. Xavier's off to college.
And there was I hadn't raced Spartan Race for about 22 months. So I managed to race in February 2020. And then obviously pandemic. And 2021, right at the beginning of December, there was that first race came up where I was trying to keep this kind of podium streak alive. Jack Bauer had kind of alluded to certain people that had managed to podium every single year. And I had the streak going from like 2015. And so managed to podium in that race in the Philippines in 2020. And then career was literally my only option. And they opened up on that Friday, that Friday, with the race being on the Saturday. And it was unbelievable in terms of, we got on that plane, and because it was still that kind of period
iffy
of time, the next flight they actually cancelled. So I literally got the one and only flight I could possibly get out for, to get out the country for that race, and obviously tested before, tested on arrival, stayed in a hotel, traveled down that night. And because I had such a strong goal at that time of, you know, trying to make sure that I could keep this podium streak alive, it really honed everything. But I did feel a tremendous sense of guilt leaving a 2-month-old baby with my wife. And I did question at that stage, you know, whether it was worth it or not. And, you know, I did manage to keep the podium streak alive, but it had, you know, had I not gone and done that, and I guess it was the experience that told me that, it really just finalized in my mind. It was like, you know, if I'd have missed this race, it really does not matter. You know, what matters is being a good father and being there when I'm needed. And yeah, I felt guilty for going away at that time. But I guess the other lesson is, you can't just put your life on hold. You've got to continue to do those things that complete you and make you. I don't know if you've again, probably not the role model to speak to of the moment, but I don't know if you guys have read Will Smith's autobiography. Will?
Haven't, no.
Yeah, this is prior to the slapping incident, but you know, he does these kind of red table discussions with his family, right? He's quite open about his family life, and he's always said, like, to take the best care of his family, he has to take care of himself first. And I think he gives the analogy of, you know, when you're on a plane and if there's an emergency and the gas masks drop, you always put your own gas mask on first, because if you are not looking after yourself, you're not able to support the younger ones around you and everything else.
Yeah.
And I definitely do abide by that principle. I think people are going to get the best out of you if you do take care of yourself, but it's about not taking the piss. You know, if you schedule your time, you know where your priorities lie, you do your thing, but you make sure that you don't go over what you should. And certainly that's where I'm at with it.
I get that. I mean, I get that on a daily basis, Ian. I mean, let's take the gas mask analogy. Let's bring it back to home. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're feeling tired, like I was 2 days ago, and I had my goal day, right? You know, I hadn't got my training in. I was quite tired. All I really wanted to do really was just chill. I didn't want to have to think about Marga. I didn't want to have to, you know, I just wanted to be selfish. Let's put that word, right? But and then you know, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, Margot's getting the paints out. Oh, really, Margot? Do you really want to do painting? Like, all of a sudden, it's like, hold on, why am I sitting here going, no, you don't want to do painting, you want to sit here with Daddy? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, actually, get off your ass, Jack. Do some painting. You know, let's paint something, Christmas trees, whatever she wanted to paint at the time. You know, it's just little things like that, isn't it? It's like, the next day, you know, I felt better. I'd been on Swift. I'd had a night ride. I did some grip work. I felt really good. I'd slept really well. All of a sudden, the day was completely different. We went swimming. You know, it was like a completely night and day, you know, like, because I'd looked after myself for that hour, an hour and a half. All of a sudden, Margot had a better day out of it because I was more willing to do things, you know, than I was before, you know, and it is like that. And you don't want to be like that. But unfortunately, as you both know, sleep is a massive thing, you know, like you can get really grumpy, moody, and just an extra hour of bed makes a huge difference. I mean, I say to my wife, I mean, she's still breastfeeding, like she's still getting up, like, I don't know how you're doing it, because I could not do that right now. Like, I definitely need 8 hours sleep, because you know, it ain't gonna happen. Jack is not going to be Jack if he doesn't get that sleep. And hats off to people that spend most of their day, even like the Jack. I don't know if you guys are bottle fed, did you, maybe when they were younger? You're probably still going through it now, Ian, are you? I don't know what your situation
is. Yeah, bottle feeding at the moment, yeah.
So at least you can help out, right? So if you're not at work at 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe you can do the 2 o'clock night feed, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I unfortunately haven't got that option because she's breastfeeding. So it is all on Emily. So I need to make sure that when it gets around to 6 o'clock and Margot's up, it's daddy time. You know, like I have to say to mum, right now, you go stay, rest in bed or whatever you need to do, go to work or whatever. And I'll take over the hard part of parenting.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Margot's, I have to say, because I've only got one child, but I think she's a very good little girl. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm very lucky that she does fit in with our routines. And like we were saying earlier, Luke, if you make a routine early, and we've always been big about routines, I think those routines, they do follow a lot. You know, like, we were having this conversation walking around last night because basically we have dinner and then after dinner we go for a walk. We've got two dogs. We always do an evening walk. You know, we make Margot walk. So we don't take any sort of pushing thing, or we make her either walk as much as she can because we find that she sleeps better if she's had, you know, a mile walk or whatever.
Absolutely.
So we make her walk. And then when she gets really tired or has to go on the shoulder, she comes on the shoulders and we carry her. And we were talking last night saying, how weird is it that even though Margot's babbling per se, we can actually understand every word she's saying, but no one else can. But I said, that's routine, because when obviously I've said to Margot, daddy's doing on the bike or whatever, you know, she'll be like, daddy on bike. So then I know what she's saying and I know what she's thinking. I know what, you know, like, I know that routine that's going in her head, you know.
And that's very normal with parents and their kids, though. You like, you spend so much time with them, you kind of realize what they're kind of saying to you, or you've kind of deciphered it per se, and then when they're talking it's kind of easier for you to understand, but somebody else is like, what's going on?
What's really interesting, when you work out what they're saying, and it could be something as simple as, like, I don't know, you know, she wants a drink or food, Luke, you know, it's the way they say it to you, and you'll find it's the way you've said it to them. You know, so maybe you've said a phrase to them repeatedly without you realizing, and they're saying it back to you.
Oh, they pick up on everything. But everything you're saying.
You said it. It's a mini you, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And as long as you know how they're thinking, if they're spending time with you, it's weird how it's one big, you know.
I have a mini Evelina, so.
Oh, do you?
I do.
I'm afraid we've got a mini Jack.
my daughter is like the spitting of my girlfriend. Like, her attitude and her demeanor, it's hilarious to watch.
Yeah. Well, on the sleep tip, we actually brought this intuitive bassinet called the Snoo. I don't know if you've heard of this.
Is that the one that shakes, like, slowly?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it shakes at different speeds depending on the behavior of the child. And then when it's crying, it shushes it and it swaddles the baby. And it was an absolutely brilliant purchase in terms of, it gives you, like, after 5 months as well, you wean them off it. So the app kind of tells you when to start kind of moving them from the Snoo, the bassinet, into their own kind of bed area or crib, whatever you want to use. And that was a game changer in terms of us getting quality sleep. And we made massive changes to our sleeping environment as well. So I brought the 8 Sleep, which I think has been absolutely amazing. That's a little bit of I think that's different, actually. So it's called the Snoo. So it's S-N-O-O.
Oh, Snoo. Okay.
Yeah. Snoo.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so we felt like that was going to be the part of our lives that was going to be most affected. So, you know, we had the blackout curtains already. I felt we had fairly good sort of sleep habits in terms of routine for when we went to bed, when we wake up, etc. But the Snoo was superb. And yeah, he's sleeping still pretty well now. We've been, I say been lucky, but I feel we plan that element really carefully and quite well.
Sounds good. I think alongside that then, so you've said you've made a few changes to like the sleep stuff. Now you're a father, you've had that kind of those months and stuff and time to like maybe make some decisions. Some stuff didn't work, some stuff did work. What would, Ian, be your number one tip for like new fathers or new parents per se? What should they go and buy? Is it the stroller? Is it the Snoo? What would be the number one kind of thing? Would it be a lifestyle change or
something? Do you know what? I would say like your best friend would be obviously Google Calendar. And I would say, you know, if they're listening to your podcast, they're going to probably be serious about trying to improve themselves, right? Or sport's going to be an integral part of their life. And you need to make time for yourself if your kids and your family are going to get the best out of you. And I feel the best way to do that is to make sure you schedule your workouts when you know you can do them uninterrupted. So if that means getting up slightly early or slightly later, or, you know, there's a period in your day where you have to get it done, put it in the calendar. Don't compromise on it unless obviously there's an emergency or something like that, and get it done at that period in time, and don't delay it 5 or 10 minutes because of Facebook or something not important. Make it a priority and you'll be better for it. Your family will be better for it. And your training can continue to improve. I think being a father can be an excuse for you not to get better. But it can also actually be the most motivational, invigorating thing ever. If you want to be, give your family the best, as I say, and actually be a great role model for what you want your child to be. Then if they see you exercising, they see you doing all this, then that's it. So
that is powerful. I tell you now, Margot is at the age now, she's 18 months, she, like I say, she started talking and doing things. The amount they, like Luke says, they pick up now is unreal. If they see daddy, I mean, like, obviously I've got my own training facility and she comes down there. She comes down mainly to see the cows, actually. But she likes watching daddy and she'll always say, daddy's monkey. Daddy's monkey, you know? And then she'll come over and she'll want me to pick her up and put her on the monkey bars.
Oh, they love that.
She'll hang from it for like 2 minutes. And like,
Harper just hangs from my pull-up bar all the time. She's lift me up. I'm like, yes, she's got good grip.
Can you imagine, like, if we weren't into OCR and we weren't sporty at all, they wouldn't get that option. They wouldn't get the opportunity. No. They might never, ever hang it for the rest of life, you know? Yeah. And I see it, I mean, I'm not picking anyone out individually, but you see it generally, don't you, in you know, just going up the village or whatever in the local town. Sit down, shut up, sit in that trolley, shut up. Yep. You know, I literally say to Margot, right, Margot, can you go fetch daddy biscuits or whatever it is, and she'll actually go up the aisles, pick them off the trolley, come all the way back, put them, because, you know, that's what I'm getting her involved. And I think that's key, isn't it? It's like you say, it's making them fit your routine first, you know, as long as it's safe and not dangerous to do so. It's allowing them to have so much just being a child, you know, and be the idiot. Don't worry about people looking stupid in the middle of Lidl. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're that parent that's got a child that's giggling and laughing and enjoying going shopping, for God's sake, which is a chore, especially like at the minute, you know, like, if you've got a child that's loving that, you're making the most of that experience, right? And
make every experience an adventure, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. And it's teaching them not to park near the nearest thing and maybe, you know, this and that. It's teaching those good habits. And I think if you've got good habits, naturally they'll have good habits. You know, like I said about the walking thing. Now she wants to sit on the chair and put her shoes on because she shows you she wants to go for a walk. You know, it's like we're not saying to her, come on, Margot, get off your iPad. You've got to go for a walk. It's almost like, daddy, I want to go for a walk now. So much so now she's started telling us she wants to go to bed. And it's like, Christ, when did that happen? This is nice now. She's saying she wants to go to sleep.
Oh, that's,
so she's really,
that's what you've got in nail, Jack.
Well, honestly, but I generally do put that down to just me and the wife, one, being on the same page, like Luke said, but two, also just routine. I think if you stick to that routine, and you'll find this, Ian, the older Xavier gets, you'll start to smile to yourself because it's like, oh, actually, this now works.
I think,
you know, like, If he's going to sleep at 11 o'clock every day for an hour, there's my hour space.
Yeah.
You know, there's my half hour core session, my half hour grip.
Sleep time is that number one kind of thing. Yeah. If you've got a consistent, like if every night it's the same kind of time and they're waking up at the same kind of time, I found the best moments like with sleep was when Harper was going to bed at the same kind of time, and she kind of knew as well. She was going in, and it worked lovely. And you're right, you do have those little an hour here, an hour there, kind of extra. Maybe you can stretch in that hour. Maybe you can do some mobility in that hour to kind of help yourself. If it's late in the evening and it's too late to work out, or you can't go for a run or something, you can still do something that's going to help you. But
the best workout, right? The worst workout is the one you didn't do.
Yeah,
you know? Absolutely.
Doing something's better than nothing.
Yeah, even if you've got an hour running planned and you can't fit that hour in because Xavier's just gone down, Harper's just gone down, all of a sudden, maybe a half hour run with some stretching is going to be better. You know, you're home, you're stretching. If Harper then wakes up, brilliant. Dad's home to look after Harper again. You know, like it isn't like you're 10 miles down the road, you know. No, so
definitely. Yeah. I think my number one bit of advice, what I already kind of mentioned before in the episode, is make it easy for yourself.
Yeah.
Make those things a little bit easier. Look, if you've not had a great night's sleep, but you still want to be getting a good workout, if you do take pre-workout, right, make sure you have a pre-workout at home that you can take before you go to the gym, or make sure that you, if you've got space, right, you can get some weights, you can have those at home. Get a weight vest. You could do lunges, press-ups, pull-ups in a weight vest. It's pretty easy to store. They're fairly cheap that you can purchase from a Decathlon or something. They don't need to be a really expensive one, but kind of make it easy for yourself at home to have somewhere to do a home workout, because like Jack said, maybe you cannot leave all the time. Maybe they're asleep, they're having their nap. Brilliant. You can get a weight vest workout in at home. You can do body weight workouts at home. If you make it easy for yourself, get those workouts printed off, have the workout in front of you so you can just read it off. You can just follow that, put it on YouTube, have that YouTube video saved in a favorite so you can go to it super quick. Just make it easier for yourself to do some kind of workout, some kind of fitness, and you'll find that the excuses just aren't there.
Yeah.
And the way to be accountable for that is, like Ian says, obviously the one option would be have a coach. If you haven't got the luxury of a coach, then you could just text your mate, right? Like if you know you've got a mate that's in it as well, like I could text Luke and say, Luke, right, I am going for my half marathon run, blah, 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 on Sunday at 2 o'clock. Can you please ring me at 2 o'clock and make sure that I've got out the bloody door? Because all it takes is Luke to ring at 10 to 2 and you're thinking, I've got to go now. Because
I've got to lace up.
Yeah, he's holding me accountable. And it could be as simple as that. You know, just text your best friend, tell your girlfriend. I mean, the best person to tell is the one that's, you know, right now. Right, Emily, tell me that I've got to go out of the house, please. Get out of the house. You know, it's easy that way, you know. And it makes you accountable, like you say, text your friend. Join a group, you know. Most places have club runs now. You've got running clubs popping up left, right and centre. Join a running club, join a cycling club, whatever it is. You know, join triathlon club or whatever your sport is. I think that's always really, really good advice. You know, just have someone help you be accountable.
Absolutely.
And you're not the only one. Like, three guys, right, that are going through this. Sure as hell, everyone else that's had a baby is going through the same thing within their sport or even within life, you know.
Massively.
And if you do miss a session, I would also say, don't panic about that. Yeah, there's, like you say, you can always jump on another session. There's always another bike ride. There's always another run. There's always things to do. And if it really is just a walk with your child, then brilliant. At least you've got out, you've got some fresh air, you've not sat in front of the TV. You know, I always say that I had last year, 2 years ago, I had the best year of carries. And I think it's due to having Margot on the back 24/7.
Oh.
You know, literally like this.
Yeah.
You know,
I think if we had the old school bucket carry back, the amount of front carrying I've been doing,
we'd be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. There's benefits as well.
100 benefits, massive benefits.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
So, Ian, we've heard about a couple of races for next year that you're kind of key for. They're both road runs, very interesting.
Yeah, and short, no stairs.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't call a marathon short, but
yeah, I just feel, I think the one thing I've lacked possibly in the past is the ability to endure. Like, if you take kind of my, I don't want to say my sprint times because that's like, it feels like a lifetime ago, But when I moved from kind of like almost like an all-out mile to a 5K and then a 5K to a 10K, then a 10K to a 21K, my drop-off is massive. You know, I'm really suited to the shorter races, really. And that's in the same for training as well. Like if I don't train for a while or I've had some time off or whatever else, I can always come back and knock out pretty fast 400, 600s. But when it starts to becoming like, say, 6x a K or 8x a K, take me a little bit longer to get into that. When it comes to the tempo work, it takes a little bit longer to get into that. So I feel, you know, I've started this kind of block at the moment, which is about aerobic building. Then I've got kind of like a specific 12-week build to the half marathon. Going to take a week off, and then I've got another 12-week build towards the full marathon, if all goes according to plan. And I just feel like a big target for me is that ability to endure. And I feel if I can nail that, then maybe the second half of the year, I'll head back to sort of Spartan, hopefully with a better aerobic base running engine than I've ever had. And I kind of feel like that could help actually my shorter times. When I did the ultra, the one and only ultra I ever did in Johor at the end of 2019, and the training I did up to that, I found it really challenging. And there was certainly doubts in my mind about me being able to complete kind of that 50km distance. As I said, like my background really is 200, 400 meters. Yeah. Like, you know, and, but, you know, off the back of that, 2-3 months later, I was finding, you know, my times over 5K had really come down. And I really think that was down to a really strong aerobic foundation. So that's kind of the thinking behind next year. So certainly, I'd love to get a Hyrox in. I know there's going to be a Deca stadium weekend, the same weekend, in Malaysia in September. So I think that will just be amazing. Like, I think it's going to be stadium on the Saturday and then a kind of hybrid of the different Decas on the Sunday. Would probably be the focus if that does go ahead for the second part of the year. Yeah.
What about the new Spartan 3K distance? Is that an appealing obstacle course race distance to you?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely brilliant move in terms of it probably doesn't suit the majority of races at the moment, right? Like, you know, if you look at the current crop of athletes, they've been taking part in Spartan because of the, you know, really the beast format was the standard championship distance.
Yeah, we said about this.
And everything else. But if you look at
Spartan was
it,
a mountain event. Yeah, basically.
If you look at what this could be in terms of viewing, I think that 3K format as a spectacle on TV could be absolutely amazing. I always think like when they used to film the World OCRs and you used to see the clips of the 3K, that race for me was super exciting. And I feel like out of all the televised Spartan races recently, I thought was it the slow race, which was the sprint 5K.
Yeah.
There were so many lead changes, and normally with these longer races, it's someone goes out and then it's a couple of people and they slow up to the obstacle, they get through the obstacle slightly fatigued, then they're running through bush. And don't get me wrong, I still enjoy it because I'm a fan of the sport, but I cannot wait to see like multiple lead changes, battles, obstacles. It really is obstacle racing in this front. So I'm excited
amazing.
For it.
I think visually, it could be the best distance and style of racing that they could put on for like a TV or an online viewing audience, because it's long enough for it to be multiple changes. Like what we were saying, when you go to like the 100 meters, most of those kind of races you're seeing, it's like one person will get out on something and they'll hold that lead. Or
it's a mistake, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a mistake. And really, you're only watching two people as well on those ones. Or it's a time trial format. This 3K, we're going to have multiple people on the start line. They're going to be all flying through these obstacles. They are Spartan obstacles, so they're going to be quite fast obstacles. It's not going to be too many like very difficult rigs that will slow you down. They will be flying through most of it, and then we're going to see some probably some exciting racing, probably the most exciting racing we've seen on TV and OCR in a long time, I think.
Yeah.
And for me as well, that format is 3 1K loops. So what's really interesting is once you've done it once, you're going to have to then do it twice more.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to know your rhythm. You're going to know your routine. You're going to know where to hit the obstacles and stuff like that. So that, I think that plays a massive factor as well.
Yeah. I think as well, like, you know, say you go along for a Spartan weekend, you know, the sprints, the supers, the beasts, they're still going to be there for us, right? But just that relay possibility as well, right? Getting together with your mates and three of you in a relay team taking a lap each, right? How exciting is that going to be? Particularly when it's at the... Have they released the footage from the 3K from Spartan Worlds yet or not?
No footage yet, but there is pictures. Obviously, they had the modern pentathlon shooting. They had the gun as an obstacle in there, and they had a few like the rigs and a few other bits, so there's
new
pictures out
as well.
But they haven't had released specific footage as well, but no, again, that's right. I think we've had at the championship events a lot of the team events, but we haven't really had that spread out across Spartan. I think this 3K could bring that team event, whereas we could actually have like team versus team, country team versus country team in and around Europe, in and around America, while also having the individual solo event. I think it's given us options by having a few more people in there. But you're right; they're still going to have championship events at the 21K as well. They've released a lot of info on that the other day, and there's going to be an invite only to the 3K World Championship. So I'm guessing it's going to be an invite off the back of qualifying through the European 3K series and the North American 3K series, which we're awaiting info for, but that's coming out. But that's cool then. So
I'm guessing you guys are excited as well, right? For it. Are you
positive
on it? Personally,
I'm excited to try it. Personally, I guess I'm going to probably lean more towards the endurance based style. I'll probably be around the 10K super to beast. I think Jack is going a bit more all in on like the 3K. I definitely want to try it and see how it is as like an event, a concept. If I love it, maybe that'll be a bit more of a full focus. But like yourself, Ian, I'm doing a marathon next year. So
Which one are you going for?
I'm doing Southampton, so I'm going to your hometown.
So that's actually, from what I understand, quite a fast course as well.
It looks to be, there are some good times on there. So
Luke's slow though, so that'd make
it. Yeah, nice. So I'll be walking, but I'm gonna give it a go. It's early part of April, so it's quite early in the season. It's before really the OCR. It's like a month or so before OCR
starts. Do you know the date on it?
Second of April.
So it's the same day actually as the Kew Gardens. That's really interesting. I probably should have done the Southampton because there's a half there as well, right?
There is a half, 10K and a 5K.
Why didn't I do the half? That's on my doorstep. Okay.
You could just walk out. Maybe you could trade that Kew Gardens ticket.
Let's have a look. Let's see if I can make some changes there, because actually I'm tempted to do that. I didn't actually realize it was on that weekend.
Perfect. You can pace me for the first half of the marathon.
There we go. If they let us off at the same time, why not? You'll probably overtake me, Luca, to be fair.
Hello. You'll KO me. You'll KO me for the second half. I'll hit the wall massively.
Oh, wow.
They moved it. It was actually later in April, and they had to change it for, I don't know what reason, but they ended up moving it to the beginning, and I'm quite happy because I think it just gives me that extra time to recover before the first Spartan. So that's good. Jack seems like you're going in on that 3K a little bit more. That's your distance. Are you keen for that now?
To be fair, mate, I'm so confused at what my distance is now. You know, I've seemed to have done well at all the differences. I don't quite know where I sit. But from a point of view of parenting, I just assumed that maybe the 3K, I don't know if you agree with me here, Ian, shorter distance is slightly easier to train for, which sounds silly because it's obviously more intense. You know, you have to be more focused on your sessions. Don't get me wrong. So I think the actual sessions themselves are harder, but getting out for a 5 mile run is nowhere near as bad as getting out for a 10 or 15 or 20 mile run, is it? Do you know what I mean? So not saying I'm going to neglect the longer stuff. Don't get me wrong. That's still going to be there, but the emphasis won't be as much on like, I don't know, an hour and a half threshold, you know, like where I'm maybe going half hour easy, hour hard, half hour easy. That type of run is what I'm really struggling to fit in. Yep. They're the runs that run away from me, because guess what? On a Sunday where I'd normally do those, we're going so-and-so with the family.
Yep.
You know, so they're the sort of runs that get neglected, unfortunately. Whereas like now, for instance, if I wasn't building a man cave, I've now got all the rest of the day to do my training. So it's like I could go get a couple of really hard training sessions in now. You know, maybe focus on grip this morning, and then maybe, you know, I could do a 5K tempo later this afternoon, you know, and it's easier to fit in personally for me, keeping those sessions under the hour.
Yeah. From what I remember, Jack, you kind of had a spell where you were aiming to do well, correct me if I'm wrong, in the, like, more in the super and the beast, but for some reason, every time a sprint came along, that seemed to be where the one where you actually would do an amazing. So maybe, just saying, you should still.
Don't do this to me.
It sounds like that formula was almost working in terms
working,
of
yeah.
Maybe these longer training.
Yeah, maybe it's the training.
And again, but for me, think, like it's going back to it. So the training plan I'm working with, I run with a club out here, Singapore Shufflers. It's absolutely amazing group of people. We're all full-time workers. You know, the youngest in the group are like 16, 17, all the way up to people in their mid-60s. And everybody, or there's people within the group that will continue to run PBs into their 40s, 50s. There's a guy similar age to me, actually, Noboru, a Japanese. He's got two kids. He brings them down the track. They use the Thule Urban Glide as well. Another shout out for that. That stroller, but he has just got better and better, and his wife has as well, through being parents of two young ones. And I think it, you know, with their longer runs, I know, for example, say it was like they were doing 25K and they started at 5:30, they make the finish time the same. So if they're adding an extra, say, 15 minutes, they'll just start at 5:15. So the end time will always be the same. They'll just bite into the beginning part. And sometimes they tag team it as well. So they'll, like, one of them will run or do the rep, and then the other person or say the kids are their trackside, go around and do the rep, and literally they find a way to make it work.
That is the probably one of the keys, isn't it? Find a way to make it work for you, for whatever you're trying to aim for or whatever your thought process is. There's always some kind of way that you can make it work.
Yeah.
Even if you get creative or something, then there is a way.
And you know, you will get it wrong, but you'll get it wrong without being a dad, and you'll get injured without being a dad. And, you know, that is part of the journey. And it's about, you know, striving to find the right formula that works for you. But that's applicable to fathers and not being fathers, but it probably is more applicable when you become a parent, because the challenge is just raised that little bit more of a kind of another ball to juggle in life.
Oh, yeah.
And the most important ball to juggle and keep hold of. So, yeah.
That's it.
For sure.
Right, guys, I think we've unpacked quite a lot on our second Dad Pod series episodes.
Absolutely.
I think we've hit a lot of new things, and hopefully you've enjoyed some of the bits that we've gone through, and Ian shown us from before he was a father to now after. He's still going, so he's doing well.
And he wants more.
And yes, another one. This is it. This is what it could be. There we go.
We'll see. Episode 3 after I have 2 and I've retired from the game. And Jack says, you really do look your age now. You know, that'll be the breaking point, baby number 2. But, you know, we'll keep pushing.
Thank you, Ian. Great podcast, mate.
Absolute pleasure, guys. Yeah, no one.